Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm co-producer Nancy Roth. We're continuing with the memoir, How to Be a Sister, a love story with a twist of autism, read by the author, Eileen Garvin.
We are riding together in the car. I'm 35 and I'm driving. You are 39 and silent. We are traveling at top speed down the Columbia River Gorge as I drive you back toward your home in eastern Washington. We're listening to classic rock because that's the only station we can get on this highway cut deep into the basalt canyon dividing Washington from Oregon. We have water on one side, cliffs on the other, and we are racing east. You are tapping a balled fist softly against your knee. I look at you, my big sister, your short brown hair the exact color of mine. As I've aged, my brown eyes have lightened to match your hazel ones. We can't offer each other much. I've always wanted to make your life better, but I don't know if that is even possible. I have no idea what you would want for me, or if you are even capable of such an estimation. But I do know, at least, that you wanted to come visit me, that you wanted to stay, and that you are happy now to let me drive you home. My heart is full of all I can't say to you, because you wouldn't understand, because you would rather ride in silence. Still, I see you there. Hi, Margaret, I say. You look at me. Hi, Eileen. We're quiet again. I'm watching the ribbon of the road racing toward us through the windshield. Hi, Eileen, you say again. Hi, Margs. I'm listening. I wonder what you are thinking, where your mind goes as you lean your head against the window and watch the white line on the side of the highway as it glides past the car. Hi, you say. I look at you. You point to the radio. That's Aerosmith, Eileen. This makes me laugh. What would Steven Tyler say? You can't call me on the phone or tell me you love me. You can't even tell me what you did last week, but you can recognize Aerosmith anywhere. Yep, that's Aerosmith, Margs, I tell you. That's Aerosmith. Yes, that's Aerosmith. You're listening to Aerosmith, Eileen. Yes, Margaret, we're listening to Aerosmith. We pass this piece of information back and forth between us like a bit of magic. It's a piece of treasure, a soap bubble catching all the colors of the rainbow. And, working together, we keep it up in the air. I'll think of this moment in years to come, when we are suffering through a rough spot brought on by one of your moods, when you don't want to talk to me, or when you want to go home early, even though I just drove 300 miles to see you. I will think of it during the times when you were quiet and happy, when you reach out to take my hand as we walk up to the house, when you sit next to me in a bar listening to a blues band, when you call goodnight to me from my guest room. I will feel it reverberate, our own hard-won and fragile joy, the thrum of the undeniable bond that links us. It's a fragile borderland between hope and change. I cling to that and try to believe that it might bleed over into the rest of my life. You have made my life indescribably different from what I could ever have imagined. I may have given up on expecting much from you, and I know things could fall apart at any moment. But I've come to understand that you are making an effort to let me into your life, just as I am creating a place for you in mine. Sometimes I can simply absorb the grace of it all, the simple fact that we are sitting next to each other, sharing the same moment. Last fall, during your visit, we climbed a steep flight of stairs from downtown to my neighborhood, and were both winded when we reached the top. As the ground flattened out, you reached over, twined your slender fingers in mine, and asked me if we were going to have dinner. I assured you that we were. You looked worried, your eyes searching mine. I know you just wanted to know what came next. So do I.
This is Bookshelf producer Nancy Roth. We've come to the end of Eileen Garvin's reading of her memoir, How to Be a Sister. Like the live audience for Eileen's readings in bookstores, I had questions that were raised by the book, so Eileen and I had a conversation. Eileen Garvin, by now I know a lot more about you than our listeners do, but maybe a short bio.
Okay. I was born in Spokane, the lovely Inland Empire, in 19... I don't want to say that. I want to tell people how old I am.
No, okay, of course. No. Hide that.
Okay. I was born in Spokane, Washington. I'm the youngest of five kids. grew up in a very raucous Irish Catholic family. I went to Sacred Heart Elementary, Cataldo, and eventually Gonzaga. So lots of years in Spokane. I'm sorry, Nancy. I really am not as awake as I look. What do you want to know? Should I talk about my professional life?
What do you do for a living?
Okay.
You
know, all yeah. right.
And you're married and that.
Yeah. I will start over.
And you're,
okay.
and you're, no, this is fine. I may just.
I'm a writer and an editor. I write for newspapers, magazines, websites. I write about business, autism, and the outdoors, generally. I'm married. I've been married for almost 13 years. If you ask my husband how long we've been married, he'll say, seems like forever.
It's a very a good husbandly
yes,
type
yes,
answer.
Yes. Yeah. And I live in Hood River, Oregon.
So you're probably an outdoors sort.
I am an outdoors sort. It's actually compulsory. If you live in Hood River, you have to be outdoorsy or they make you leave.
I was thinking, yes.
We kiteboard and mountain bike and backcountry ski and road bike and yoga and everything else you might want to do.
I know of your book because of your mother, Pat, who is a wonderful, wonderful friend of the station and one of our very favorite volunteers here. She's been doing this forever and she's a great listener and a great volunteer and a terrific person, and probably lots of people listening to this broadcast know her. However, that is not why we chose the book. That was just what brought it to our attention. It's beautifully written, and I felt that the subject was really worth attention, and that is why we chose it for broadcast. And I've been pleased to be the recordist, the technician, as it were, and to hear the book read word for word, which is always a great pleasure when a book is well written. Do you remember what first gave you the idea of writing this book?
I do. It was sort of an evolution. I always have always wanted to write about Margaret because the older I got, the more I realized that growing up with her was an incredibly unique experience. And many of the stories in the book are stories that my family has told over and over for years, things that we've kind of passed around as these fond and slightly hysterical memories. So those were always there, that desire to write. And several years ago, as a Mother's Day gift idea, my brother Michael, he's the closest to me in age, Michael asked us to all email around Margaret stories that we remembered about Margaret. And this list included all my siblings and some family friends that were particularly close to us. And so that's when I started kind of thinking about the ones that I remembered the most. That was intended to be a gift for my mom, and it never quite came together the way we didn't complete it. So that was there. And then I started, when I was living in Hood River, I was writing essays, getting more into the essay form for magazines and newspapers. And I thought I would put together a series of essays about my recollection of Margaret. But along the way, I realized as I had an outline in my head of categories, if you will, of things like the wedding stories and the dining out stories and the childhood disruptions, crazy things that happen in church that I wanted to write about. But as I started putting it together, then I realized there was this whole other narrative happening, which really had to do with the point of the book, which was me as an adult looking back and saying, okay, that's what happened in the past. What am I going to do now as an adult sibling? What's my relationship with Margaret going to be? And so the two came together, the old stories and then my present day trying to understand how to connect with Margaret. And I wove the two of them together in the book.
So over how long a period of time did you work on this?
Well, as I said, some of those stories have been around for decades. But actually sitting down to write it, I started writing in earnest in the end of 2006, so that by summer of 2007, I had what I felt was a pretty strong manuscript and started going to writers' conferences and talking to agents.
You've done readings all over the region that I'm aware of. I don't know if outside. What are your audience's particular interests when they come to hear you?
It's been very interesting. I've been lucky to read all over the West, actually. I've been everywhere from Seattle to Albuquerque, and I was in Connecticut this summer as well. So really had a lot of opportunity to do different events. So what people are interested in, of course, people tend to want to know what my family thought of the book. People want to know what Margaret's response was. I've had a wonderful time connecting with other siblings. That's an incredible moment. Every time after I do a reading and I'm sitting at the table signing books, someone comes up to me either, you know, weeping or laughing, and we don't even have to explain because we just understand. It's like a family reunion with someone you've never met before. It's been wonderful to connect with siblings in that way. Parents also, I was maybe surprised at first because maybe a little trepidatious being a sibling spokesperson, because they want to know, they have questions for me. What can they do for their other kids that don't have autism? But it's been wonderful to reach parents as well. And I think the category that surprised me the most are people who don't have anyone with autism in their lives. They're not parents, they're not siblings, but they have somebody. They've got a difficult mother-in-law, or they have kind of a strange cousin, or just a relationship with somebody in the family that, for whatever reason, it's always been difficult. And they connect with the story, too. And that's been wonderful, that kind of universal, because that's really what this story and so many stories are about, is trying to reach the people that you love, even though sometimes it seems impossible.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because it's not just this happened and this happened. You include your personal reflections, your growth in acceptance of these things. You're restructuring those old memories that in encounters that you had as a child. They're still there, but this has given you a chance to reflect on this admittedly very difficult relationship. And that colored your life enormously. And so in that regard, it's a gift to all of us, who is without a difficult relationship.
Right.
I know the book has put you in touch with a community of other people whose lives are touched by autism. Tell us something about that, what you've discovered.
I've discovered a wonderful community of adult siblings of people with disabilities, and I first became aware of them through an organization, a wonderful organization in Seattle called the Sibling Support Project. It was started in 1990 by Don Meyer, and it was initially set up for children of kids with disabilities. Don has run what he calls Sib Shops all over the world, and they are an opportunity for adolescents and teenagers of other children with disabilities to get together and have a peer group and talk about the not so good and the challenges, and also have fun together and talk about the good stuff as well. But as children, kind of having the opportunity to voice their concerns and their experience. And so Dawn started that network, and a lot of those kids then, as they've grown up, they stayed together, and he has also nurtured an adult listserv at his organization that I became a member of, and it's just a wonderful resource there. And people seem to be anywhere from 20 years old to 70 years old, mostly sisters, which is an interesting element. The Sibling Support Project introduced me to the Sibling Leadership Network, which is a fledgling organization of siblings of adults with disabilities. And they helped put on the first International Sibling Conference in Stamford, Connecticut this year. It was a wonderful weekend. And the irony is that people who read this book will see that Margaret dominated my entire life. And it was just the most formative force in my life through childhood and adulthood. But I never knew any other siblings besides my own, just for reference. And so meeting all these people was just this amazing experience. And at that conference, I met a number of brothers and also brothers-in-law, which is a whole nother
layer. Who are caregivers.
Huh. Or guardians.
Uh-huh. So what's the difference between the guardianship and the caregiver role?
For someone with a sibling with a disability as an adult, your level of involvement varies. Someone might have their brother or sister move in with them and be the caregiver in the sense that they're the one who helps them take care of their personal needs, helps them get to work, takes care of all their paperwork, just like a parent would, but they're a sibling. And guardianship is just the legal element. So in my case, for example, my parents are Margaret's legal guardians. we have set it up such that eventually my brother Larry and I will be co-guardians. So we'll be the kind of the custodians of all the paperwork and legal stuff. But Margaret's never going to move in with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, caregiver is more of a at-home role.
You know, something that I probably should have addressed before this stage of the interview is this range, the spectrum of autism. Margaret is, the way you describe her is that the communication is, you don't never really know what's going on with Margaret.
Right. So autism is called a spectrum disorder because it affects people in a wide, it affects each person differently.
So and Margaret is very different from somebody else's child or sibling.
Yes. And the way I explain it is Margaret's autism is very severe. So the kinds of, the general characteristics of autism that you read about, communication is one of the biggest difficulties, and that certainly is one for Margaret. So difficulty communicating and forming relationships. So Margaret doesn't talk much. She has trouble with social situations and with relationships. I think the easiest way to explain it is to say that her autism is severe. I attended a wonderful conference in October that was for adults with autism spectrum disorder, and most of the presenters had autism. And this wonderful young woman, I can't remember her name, but she will say in answering this question, when you've met one person on the spectrum, you've met one person on the spectrum. So everybody's different.
Now, so Margaret is, I've met Margaret once or twice. She came to the station a few years ago, and it was clear that she had communication difficulties. But with other people with autism, it's not so evident. Is that?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. With Margaret, if you look at her, you wouldn't know there's anything different
right.
about her. But if you try and talk with her, then you'll start to notice. And there are things that, there are nuances that you wouldn't even really be able to identify unless you know somebody like her for a while and you realize, oh, she's not looking at me in the way I would expect her to, or she's not shaking my hand in the way I would expect, mm-hmm. or she's hugging me and I, where there'd be a handshake, you know, just these kind of different things. Whereas other people, Temple Grandin, who's probably the most famous person with autism alive today, jokes that if it weren't for autism, Silicon Valley wouldn't exist. So, you know, you meet these brilliant computer scientists and engineers. I met some at the same conference, people in their 60s that are getting diagnosed for the first time. That's not a norm, so I don't want to say that. It's just that if you meet Margaret, you'll notice something different when you start to talk to her. You might meet somebody else with autism and not ever really know that they have autism. There just might be something a little different about
them.
Or
you might think, oh, they're just shy.
Yeah, they're shy mm-hmm.
or they don't like me.
Or they're arrogant.
Yeah, or they're arrogant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this conference, you said, was quite new. Right.
The International Siblings Conference, it's the first one that they've held, and it was put on by the Sibling Leadership Network. It was a terrific weekend with all kinds of speakers, everything ranging from how to, maybe I should explain this first, the role of siblings. So as an adult, the reason that this is important is not just so much to connect with other people and say, oh, we had the same experience. Isn't this so interesting? Someone finally understands me. I mean, that's certainly there and that's terrific. But the reason that siblings are important in understanding people with disabilities is that we become the support network for our brothers and sisters as our parents age and pass away. And so what people don't realize is that the sibling relationship lasts longer than the parent-child relationship. So my relationship with Margaret will outlast my mom's and Margaret's relationship, which is my mom's been incredible support for Margaret. My parents made it possible for Margaret to have the wonderful living situation she has now and have been incredible support for her. But I will be here longer. So what does that mean? It means that siblings like me, whether we become the caregivers where our brothers and sisters are living with us, or if we're just guardians, or if we're just involved in kind of an ancillary position, we need to help with things like legal issues of guardianship. We need to understand how to help them with housing, health care, jobs, recreation, all these things, saving money. How does this work? So this workshop, the conference addressed a lot of those issues, and it was just wonderful. incredible gathering of information for people like us.
My impression is that nothing like this really existed until quite recently.
This was the first of its kind on a national scale, the organizers told me. There are groups, adult group, sibling groups around the country that have been really building strength, but this is the first time they tried to put it out to a national audience. And siblings, especially, well, adults and children of people with disabilities, it's kind of an unknown population. And that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to write this book, was to explain what the experience it was like. And what people don't realize is that the Sibling Support Project helps articulate this very well. Siblings are going through all the same things that parents are going through. So when we were kids, in childhood, in the house, when there's disruption and, you know, the anger and the frustration and the grief and the funny parts too, but all that turmoil that the parents are having to absorb, the siblings are going through it too. And parents tend not to recognize that. I think justly so, because they're so focused on trying to help their kid with a disability, and they're so trying to cope themselves and keep their marriage together and put food on the table and everything else, that they don't really recognize what a huge impact it's having on their other children. It's also kind of a survival mechanism, I think, because I think they need to think, everybody else is okay. I can't think there's anything wrong with my other kids because I have to focus on this problem. So it's important for people to understand that that's really happening. The second part of it, and kind of a positive side of it, is that siblings like me, we never knew anything different. So I was so in tune with Margaret from a very young age because I never knew anything different. And so children, especially living with that kid day after day, watching their behavior, understanding their moods, becomes an incredible resource for parents and teachers and therapists and doctors, and can be included in the conversations that are happening about that.
And that wouldn't have happened back when but that's an interest, very interesting mm-hmm. piece mm-hmm. because it's true. They're closer in age. They probably understand a great deal more.
Mm-hmm.
So to bring the siblings in, probably at almost any age.
I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh. Almost at any age.
Uh-huh. Huh, that's extremely interesting. And I noticed that you refer to disabilities because, of course, similar situations would be met with other kinds of disabilities where that sort of support would be necessary. Although with autism, the communication problem makes it more difficult, I suppose.
In our case, I think it does. But mm-hmm. I know other siblings with brothers and sisters with autism that it's not as severe. The thing with Margaret is if you live with Margaret or you see her all the time, she communicates. It's just in a different way. And
oh, I see. I think reading the book, I was most aware of the frustration when you and she were younger, when you were children, where she would go and fly into a rage.
Yes.
Or seem, you know, in pain or something, and you had no idea what was going on.
Right. And that was the most frustrating and difficult part of it. And that's just, and as I've written about, we struggled so much because she would just get really out of control. And the impulse is to help this person, to help and make the noise stop and calm everything down. And we just couldn't, because that's when she would get so upset she just couldn't communicate. But otherwise, the humor and her extreme affection for people and her likes and dislikes, things she wants to do and doesn't want to do, and things that make her happy, those are all things that Margaret communicates in her own way. And she communicates them best with people that she's with all the time. Not living with her anymore, I recognize how I miss out on that, because she just can't sustain, like you and I, for example, we could email or talk on the phone or think about each other. So the next time we saw each other, we would have this kind of resonance of our friendship. And with Margaret, she can't really do that. So she's most comfortable with the people she's with all the time. So when you see her again, it's like you have to start again. And she's, I guess what I'm getting at is how much of her conversation is nonverbal, and you have to understand it from becoming accustomed to you have to look for it.
Talk about other resources that might be available to families with autistic.
So I try to keep my website resource page updated, and that's howtobeasister.com. and I have a list that I add to all the time of books and movies and websites. For siblings, I think the Sibling Support Project, you can Google that, is a wonderful resource for children and for adults. For adults, the Sibling Leadership Network is also a great place to get in touch with people. There's a wonderful, just an ever-growing list of books out there that it's wonderful to see because it wasn't there when we were growing up. And I'll just mention a couple that I think for families, I think reading The Siege and Exiting Nirvana, both by Clara Claiborne Park. She's an amazing writer and a wonderful parent. She passed away earlier this year. Those are terrific books. One of my favorites is called That Went Well, Adventures in Caring for My Sister by Terrell Harris Dugan.
I would suggest just Googling Eileen Garvin, that's G-A-R-V-I-N, will get you there. And you said you have a blog that you...
I do. I have a blog on psychology today called Sister on the Edge of Autism, and I think that comes up pretty high up when you Google Eileen Garvin. Okay. I also update...
Or you could Google Psychology Today.
Sure.
The magazine.
Yes, and mm-hmm. And they have a wonderful collection of blogs on any topic you might want to...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Great.
And I also blog just about book stuff on howtobeasister.com.
Well, thank you so much to you, Eileen Garvin, and also to your family, and especially to Margaret.
Thank you, Nancy.
You've been listening to How to Be a Sister, A Love Story with a Twist of Autism by Eileen Garvin, published in 2010 by the Experiment Publishing of New York, and read by the author. You can get more information on the author and the book on Google, Eileen Garvin, G-A-R-V-I-N. The Bookshelf is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Executive producer is Vern Windham. Thanks to our two fine technical editors, Ellie Hawkett and Caitlin Webster. They're from the Lewis and Clark PICI class. I'm producer Nancy Roth.